So, welcome to the second episode of Spill the Tea with Jimmy C podcast. I'm Jim, your host, and tonight we are joined by my very, very good, and I'd probably say my best friend, Mr. Chris McAvoy. Hello, sir. How are you?
Good evening. Very good, mate. Very good. And it's great, great to be on the program.
Brilliant. Well, this is the second episode of Spill the Tea. The first one, which has been out already, was mainly just me talking some stuff about myself. However, as I said in that podcast, and with all the things that we're doing, it's about our guests, and it's talking to our guests and asking them how I know them, how we know each other, and also a little bit about themselves. So in this episode, we're going to talk about Chris and how we know each other, basically. So Chris.
Yeah. Okay. So we met in 2009. I'd just joined Thurrock Council as a community protection officer, having just come from a stint in retail. Spent a year in retail before that. Quite a dreary job in a shop that really, really wasn't my cup of tea at all. And yeah, joined the team that you were already on. And obviously, we quickly established that we were, you know, we had lots of common interests and we were very like-minded. So we obviously hit it off straight away. And I think the rest is kind of history. We, as you say, we've become really good friends, certainly best friends. And it's absolutely flown by, hasn't it, since then? So that's 2009. It's now 2021. So how quickly has time gone?
Exactly. And it's been a good, it has been a really good, what, it'll be 12 years. 12 years that we've known each other. My maths is right. Yeah, my maths is not always my strong point. But yeah, 12
we'll
years.
We'll go with 12.
That'll do. Sounds a lot. But yeah, and we did meet and we worked together. And yeah, we found that we had some common interests. And one of those was Subway.
Oh, yeah. Famous Subway. Yeah. The famous Subway. And we must have, the share prices must have gone up tenfold in Subway. Yeah. I think we kept the Grey store open for a while, didn't we?
Oh, exactly.
On our own.
Exactly. What was it? Steak and cheese? No, what was it? What was our favourite one?
It was like meatball.
It was like little sort of lover's lunch, wasn't it? We used to go down. Let's go Subway, and we'd go down. We'd have a bit of beef and meatball, and there wasn't a steak
think,
or something.
I think the
well.
Wife. I think the wife thought there was something going on for a little while there. Didn't
she? Yeah. And then she met me and went, nah.
I think the feeling was mutual. Yeah, both sides.
That crop wearing motherfucker, you know.
I think that was half the job, wasn't it? Half our job was finding good places to eat, really, wasn't it? We
well,
had
yeah.
the breakfast haunt in Purfleet housing estate.
Oh, the big breakfast that you could have for £2.50. Was it £2.50?
Oh, it was cheap. It was cheap. It was good. Cheap.
Yeah, it was. Good.
And then the various places around Thurrock shopping centre. But yeah, Subway was the best one, wasn't it, for a while?
It was, and. Yeah, there was. What was the other one? Half a chicken each in Morrison's. That was one of the other things, wasn't it?
That was a good one. We were a bit spoiled, weren't we?
We were. Now, I, you know, where I live up in Norfolk, you can just about get anything. You have to bring me out lunch because if I go out anywhere, it takes me 25 minutes to get somewhere to get something to eat.
I just think it's lucky that we didn't have Just Eat going on there then, because we wouldn't have gone anywhere.
Oh right,
just stayed in Morrison's, wouldn't we?
Exactly. Well, no, mate. The amount you order from Just Eat, they're keeping it running going. This, I tell you what, everyone who's listening, right? Chris and I, and we'll go into a little bit later on. So any of the Call of Duty guys who are listening out there from the Taters squad, we have a WhatsApp going on. Chris just posts about food. He just tells us, oh, I'm having a kebab or I'm having a breakfast. What was he had the other day? A full breakfast from Just Eat.
That was good. That's the first one for me.
Was
yeah,
that
early in the morning. That was half 7 in the morning. Woke up starving, hungry after a big bike ride the day before, and just needed to eat something big. And I had nothing in the fridge, so I checked out local cafes. I was on there before the cafe were open.
Yeah.
So I was patiently waiting for them to open. And the moment they opened, slammed the order in, and it was delivered in about 15 minutes. Best thing ever. I open my credit card bill at the moment each month, like through my eyes, like closed, dreading what I've spent on it this month, and it's it's frightening.
Is that your wife standing behind you going, "What? You spent how much?"
Yeah, I have to go out to the shed and check it. secretly. It's all electronic on the phone, so it's all covered.
You get it delivered to work. The credit card statement gets delivered to your office so that you don't...
Yeah, secure via email.
Oh dear. But do you know what? I think with the old Just Eat and Uber Eats and stuff like that, I'm so glad that where I live, all I can get is an Indian. That's all I can get for takeaway. I have to go out and get it. So it puts me off actually going out, because sometimes, especially over the winter, I'd be at home and I think, oh, what can I have? Let's have a kebab. I want to go to the nearest town to get a kebab. It's like a 30-minute round trip. And I just can't be bothered. So I just think, no, I'll just stay home and have some ham.
No, it's dangerous. It's dangerous having that in London. It's dangerous in London because you've got everything on your doorstep and it's pretty 24/7 you can get food. So
I've got friends of ours who, when we went, this was pre-COVID, we went to see them at their house and we turned up and they wanted to play. They got kids and they said, oh, let's have a big game of FIFA on the Xbox. So they've got an Xbox. And then they suddenly realised that they only had 3 controllers. So I said, oh, don't worry. We'll just play 3 and we'll just have to share. No, it's fine. Went on to Amazon, ordered it, delivered within an hour. You know, where I'm lucky if I get my Amazon order on Prime, where I live at the moment. So, but yeah. So we've known each other for a long time. We've worked together and we've worked in the good old Thurrock Council. But not just then, since we've both left there and gone off on different paths, we've worked together.
So just to recap how we got on so well, it was we both had punchy misses.
Yeah.
Who would throat punch
but
you
if you still
stepped out of line.
I'm just checking behind me. She's not here. She's not behind me.
That's how we, you know, so you had that in common. We obviously had the kids going on and the madness. I don't know if you had the dogs. You had, well, your parents had dogs, didn't they, at the time?
We had one dog.
That's
yeah.
right. Both London boys, both ex-police.
Yeah.
Both had I think it's fair to say you've obviously got a heart of gold and, you know, that was interesting because I thought you haven't done several years in a job. You hadn't corrupted you at that point.
No.
Whereas I was completely cynical by that point. And that was enough. Six years in the Met had corrupted me enough to, you know, to have a cynical view on everybody. But yeah, so we had a lot in common then, didn't we?
Obviously,
I think we sealed the deal over the love of food as well. So I think that was a... So to sort of sum up, our Thurrock days.
The love of food and the hate of other people, I think.
Yeah, pretty much.
Hate's a strong word, but I would say, you know, just... sitting there thinking, what a bunch of dickheads. When you go into Tilbury
and you start dealing with some of the people over there, sometimes you could define it as a joint hatred. But the foundings of a beautiful relationship there, wasn't it? And then we've gone on strength from strength from there, haven't we, really? And
yes.
As you say, it's amazing really where we've gone to.
I think that's one of the things why we get on so well is because we're both people who are very keen. And when we throw ourselves into doing something, we throw it in 150, 200%. And I think I'm a very keen person. For those that know me, I'm very keen in what I do. And I will always try and do it to my best of my ability. And I'm really keen to do something and I'll get it going. And you are as well, mate. And I think that's why we worked so well. And we got on so well because... We know things not to talk about, so we don't talk about politics because that just goes completely out the window. And there are a few, not many, but there's a couple of other things we just don't discuss about. However, we talk about everything and we talk about everybody and we spill the tea, as they would say, and you know, and we have a good old discussion about stuff. And from there, we've been able to change, you know. Following on from our Thurrock days, we've stayed good friends and we probably talk to each other every day, if not every other day, because especially at the moment with COVID, we can't meet. So, and we will talk about a little bit later on about the Call of Duty lads and what we do with that, because, you know, there's quite a lot of people out there who have fallen into the Verdansk's net, shall we say. Especially over the last 12 months. And we've just remained friends ever since. And I think we've never, touch wood, we've never fallen out about anything. We've had a difference of opinion, but we both know when to get, we get to a point where we just say, do you know what? Yeah, let's beg to differ, or let's, you know, but we do think along similar sort of lines. And normally it's to get the job done or to get the task complete or to do what needs to be done without faffing around and, you know, trying to not do it, shall we say. So random question for you now. Nando's order or your favourite takeaway? So we've talked a little bit about it already. Nando's hasn't been open. I can't remember. Are you a Nando's person? No?
Yeah, I don't mind Nando's. I mean, it's not my go-to place. I'd rather go for a Turkish mezze or, you know, just a kebab, really.
Yeah, so kebab, chicken kebab?
Yeah, favourite meal.
Call of Duty. Let's talk about that. That's taken over probably since last... Well, I would say since last March, but we've actually been... You, me and Ron have been a little mini team for... Donkey's years. From when you converted
I've lost track.
From when you converted me across from the Xbox and you said to me, you don't want to go on Xbox, it's rubbish. You want to be on a PS. So I sold my Xbox that I've been loyal to for years and bought a PS. I think it was a PS3, I think it was. And then moved.
So did you used to play online with your friends on Xbox before?
Yes.
Okay.
A little
bit. So you still sold the Xbox and got the PlayStation?
Yeah. Cause
and do you regret that?
No.
So there you go then. There you go. Exactly. I don't need to say anything, do I?
I just want a PS5. So Sony, if you're listening and we become a big hit, we'll have a couple of PS5s for free, please.
I don't mind testing them. The beta version's fine.
Yeah, I'll test one and just not
I'll do
give
it for
back.
You, free of charge.
Not give it back. Send them. Yeah, so last year, Chris sent me a message and said, well, I'm playing with some mates. Do you want to come and play Warzone? Because I think we played it a few times before, or we played COD before, Call of Duty. And he said, you'll like these guys, you'll like them. So we joined a WhatsApp group, which became another WhatsApp group after we had the Splinter WhatsApp group from the first WhatsApp group. Good old story. Yeah, so go on, tell us about that then, because no one cares. You know, it was quite funny what happened.
So we had our own WhatsApp group before. Me, you, Ron, my son, and your missus at one point, I think.
Yeah.
Because obviously Michaela's obviously very good on and very keen PS4 player when she gets time.
Yeah.
And then that kind of didn't die a death, but it stopped really talking about PS4 on that group, it's fair to say, for a little while. And then Warzone started.
Yeah.
So Call of Duty came in, obviously, and a lot of friends our age, you know, similar age group, dusted off their old PS4s and were starting to get back online again. It was COVID, couldn't go out anywhere and all that sort of stuff. So one of our other friends, Restel, he had a different WhatsApp group set up to just purely for Warzone. He added loads of people in that I didn't know. I joined it and we brought some of the friends that I knew into that group. And so we had that WhatsApp group to discuss that. And then there was a couple of oddballs in there that, you know, didn't even contribute to the chat or would contribute randomly or would see that we'd come online and then join us online, but then just didn't do what, you know, it's a team game. It's a strategy game, isn't it? It's a team game.
Yeah.
You've got to be in it together. And if one person, you know, isn't sort of doing the playing with the team, your whole thing falls down, doesn't it?
Right.
So it became very frustrating very quickly playing with that particular person.
Yeah.
And so our old original PS4 chat group then started to come alive with, hey Jim, do you want to come online? I don't want to go online with such and such because I just can't stand going online and him fucking off 400 yards to the other side of the map, doing his own thing, dying, and then you're basically man down.
Where are you?
Oh, where are you?
I'm over here. And then you look on the map, 500 meters in the opposite direction. You're like, what are you doing over there? Oh well, I decided to do a bit of looting, and then there was. I'm down. Where are you? 500 meters. Well,
and then it was getting annoyed with you for not following off on a tangent. So that became a little bit of an irritant. So our little WhatsApp group sort of flared up again, and we just sort of did our own thing. And then as people that we chatted with online discovered about it, were like, "Oh yeah, add me in." And so that group kind of grew, and then the original group that had about 10 or 15 people in it just died a death, and everyone started leaving it, and it left the person whose name shall remain unspoken alone in the group. And that person then just kind of fell by the wayside. So it just shows you, doesn't it? If you're just a bit of a pain in the ass, basically, and a bit of a non-team player, people don't want to know you. And, that, yeah. and that's kind of what happened. So, yeah, and obviously since then, our original group is now obviously the main group, and it's gone from strength to strength, and there's loads of people in it, and it's a... It, not a day goes by without people talking on it and engaging.
Exactly,
on it, so.
Exactly. And we've, I think there's you and me, and there's Restall, aka Funky Boozer. There's, who else is there? There's Pat, aka Teaserface. Also, there's Bish, the Bish Man, Watson. What's Watson's one? Stiggy.
Stig 101.
Who else is there? The one us, you and me, and Mason.
Yeah, we'll have to bleep our names out, I think.
Do we? What, our tag names?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what, I'll do that bit again. I'll do that bit again. Right. Oh, what? Our names? Oh, no. Well, it's, yeah, them's for us and the finger after. I'm going to change mine, though. I'm going to change mine because kids come in, they go, Dad, what's that?
I'm yeah, like, I'm the same. I bought my whole gaming PC to shut them up and just kind of play their own games, but they yeah. still know about it, so.
Yeah. Awkward. I heard
hashtag orcs.
Orcs, the situation about the horse, but well, that's a story for another time. So, yeah, and we have good fun on that, and we're on every night, and, we'll, you know, likely this, I'll definitely try and get on after we finish recording this podcast. But I think that's really important, and with that, you know, again, this is meant to be, the whole point of this is meant to be a laugh, it's meant to be quite lighthearted, but I think definitely because of the way that COVID has been and the fact that today is the first day, and this will show when we're recording, that people can get back out and get into pubs. To sit out, well, not into pubs, so sit outside of pubs. It's been used, and I've definitely listened to a lot of other podcasts, and there's been a lot of reference, funny enough, whether it's on Xbox or PC or PS4 or PS5, to Warzone, in the fact that males and females, or all genders, have been able to meet new people, because when I joined that group, I knew you, and that was it. I didn't know any of the other. I knew Ron, because Ron was in it for a little bit. And I didn't know anybody else, and I've got to know all the other people, and I've not met any of them face to face. And I think that will change, hopefully, when we can. We've definitely also, we're going to meet up as soon as we can, possibly can. And I think that there's been a lot of talk about how people have played this across the world. And there used to be the old joke of, you know, sitting at home playing on your PlayStation all the time, but actually it's helped a lot of people's mental health. Definitely it's helped mine, because I've been able to communicate out with other people. And, you know, I'll be honest, on a Friday or Saturday night, if not during the week, I would go to my local village social club and have a couple of beers, or even not have a couple of beers, I'd watch the football and just chat to people that I knew or chat to my friends. But being with restrictions and COVID, you can't do that. You're not able to do that. You're not even, to a certain extent, up until recently, were able to go out to open spaces, or, you know, even if you stop to speak to somebody in the street, there's a possibility that you could be moved on because of the chance, you know, the worry that there could be a spread of COVID. So something like that has been a massive, and I know that there may be people listening who will be sitting there nodding their heads, hopefully, playing things like Warzone has been a massive help for people to communicate out and meet new people. You know, I get on with everybody within our little clan of people. There's some I get on probably better than others. That's no disrespect to any of them, because you don't always get on with you get on with everybody, but you sometimes you might get on a little bit better. You know, like Bristol or Mason get on really well. They go and play golf. You know, you and I have always got on very well, and there's other people who I get on. And I love Watson. You know, he's a funny lad. I'm shitter than he is on Warzone, but he laughs about it. And as we said the other day, I think you and I had a conversation. I go on, yeah, we want a dub. That's a win for those that don't know. We want a dub. We want to win the game. But also, we can go on and we can play 10 games. We can be absolutely pants. But we've had a good old chat, you know, and we've put the world to rights whilst firing a couple of AK-47s and blowing up some cars and helicopters, you know, and that's a good thing to be able to do. And I think that's what a lot of people have missed. So
I think you've hit a really good point here. There's almost like a subtopic really, that's it deserves its own sort of spotlight in its own right. And I think you talk about men's mental health, and I don't think it'd be interesting to see what COVID effect it had on men's mental health. We all know that men are much, you know, especially in our age category, are that's the right. highest risk group for suicide and going missing and self-harming and all that sort of stuff.
That's right.
And so I think you're absolutely right that what it's done is it's given, you know, the exact group that it needs to an outlet. So you think, as you say, you've made some new friends. Yeah, I've certainly made some new friends. We've cemented some old friendships and some ongoing friendships. We've had that almost daily outlet, almost every day for the last year. We've been able to go on there for a couple of hours or as little or as long as you want. Go on there, no stress. No. And just as you have a laugh and a joke, socialise, talk about your worries. You know, there's been one or two in the group that have gone through some trauma in that year as well. And that group has been really important to, I think, to support that single person that's having those problems at the time and talk about it, counsel them, give them some advice, point them in the right direction, and then ultimately have a laugh and a joke and talk your way through it. And I think without that, I think there'd be a lot of people in a, you know, some really crappy positions. So I think it's really important that, you know, I think there's a stigma attached to playing computer games, especially for people that have never played them or the older generation that have never played them. And I think certainly as you get towards your middle age, people think you play computer games. And I think, thankfully, that stigma's kind of dying out a little bit, isn't it? Because it's not just about computer games. For me, and certainly for you and certainly for our group, it's a lot bigger than that. It's a social thing. And that's the main thing for us, isn't it? It's a social event. And we go online and we talk and we laugh and we joke and we, you know, and we socialise. And that's been really important, especially when we've not been able to do it otherwise.
Well, exactly. And absolutely. And I think that is really important. So, and I think Activision, the people who have made Warzone, have done an absolute sound job of, they offer it because you can get it for free. You don't have to pay. You don't have to. All you've got to do is you've got to get yourself a PC or a PlayStation or whatever. And Warzone, the actual game, is free. There's no charge for it. You don't have to pay for it. However, if you want other parts of the game, you've got to pay for it. But I could be wrong. I think it is still free for people just to download it. And that is a massive thing for not just men, but all genders. You know, there's some quality female players out there who would probably destroy all our team on their own. And it is a massive, you know, it's a massive thing, which has allowed people to link together. And yeah, all right, I'm originally from London. I'm originally from North London. And I know that you and a lot of the team live sort of South London, Kent, etc. But then we've got another member of our team who lives halfway up the country. You know, not my side of the country, the other side of the country. So we're all able to link together on a daily basis. And, you know, just talk about stuff. And yeah, I think it's a massive thing. So anybody out there who doesn't have a PlayStation or an Xbox and doesn't have Warzone, even if you just go on from a social element point of view, we can definitely say from both of us that it's been a massive help with our mental health, our communication with the outside world and with other people. So massive thing. Brill. Top three programs you're watching at the moment.
Spending too much time on Warzone to get onto the telly, to be honest. And obviously the kids have the monopoly on it.
Yeah, I know that.
Sons of Anarchy. We're watching Sons of Anarchy at the moment.
Right.
That's not too bad.
I watched Sons of Anarchy. I watched that. Was it seven seasons or whatever it is? Somebody introduced me to that. How did you get on watching that? Did you just pick it up on Netflix or whatever it was?
I think we've gone through a few box sets recently. Breaking Bad was the one we watched before that. So we're a little bit behind the curve on that one, because that was obviously been out for a while, isn't it? So Breaking Bad we watched before that, and we were just looking at box sets, and that was one of the box sets we hadn't watched yet. So that's what we're currently on.
Yep.
I think before that, the big box set that we watched and sort of binge watched massively was...
you said about Breaking Bad.
Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
So I think for me, Game of Thrones was probably the best box set I've seen in a long, long while. I think the only one I enjoyed more than that before that was Band of Brothers.
Yeah. I've started watching that again. One other that's been doing the rounds quite a bit, I don't know whether, and if not, have a look. The Last Dance with Michael Jordan.
No, I've not seen that one.
Okay. If you get a chance, have a look. I've been watching that, and I didn't really think it would be my cup of tea. I mean, I was a massive, massive fan of the Chicago Bulls back in the 90s. And I didn't, a lot of people have talked about it and I picked it up, and that was one that came up. And if you get a chance, it's a documentary more, but it's nine, I think it's 96 or 97 after their massive winning streak. And it just talks about Michael Jordan and how focused he is on, as an athlete, on winning, basically.
What was the team? Chicago Red Bulls.
Chicago Bulls, yeah.
Chicago Bulls. So it's funny that, because I don't know, around the time that they were really massive, they must have been massive, because basketball wasn't really a big thing when we were in secondary school, but unless you were one of the cool kids that played basketball. But I did have a Chicago Bulls.
Tall and had huge feet. Exactly,
which I wasn't. So I did have a Chicago Bulls basketball, and I do recall it being quite a big prominent thing. This is before, you know, we had Sky Sports, before we had access to that kind of sport exposure on in the UK. But yet I had a Chicago Bulls basketball, and I had a basketball net put up in the mum's back garden when we moved out of London originally. So yeah, it must have been a thing at the time. I do recall that now you mentioned it. So I'll have to have a look at that.
Yeah, do. It's on Netflix, but it's quite a good one to watch.
I mean, everyone knows who Michael Jordan is. I mean, yeah, well, again, even in the UK, you know, he is, you know, he's one of the highest earners, if not the highest earners in basketball for a long while. Absolutely. And that he's famous for his, you know, for his basketball skills, the jumps and the slam dunks and that. So, and that's a sport that's not really popular in the UK. So, yeah, they must have been massive to, you know, penetrate that far in, really.
And one of the things which I picked up, which I was really astonished about, well, there's a number of things, but he talks about how he came from nothing, basically. He came from a massive, a big family, and he just focused and focused and focused and got where he wanted to be, and he was so focused. And he talked about when he first took up his sponsorship with Nike for the Air Jordans. I always wanted a pair of Air Jordan trainers, the ones with the little pumpy bit on the on the tongue. And they talked
about... We all did, mate, but none of us could really afford them at the time. No, 100 quid or something. That was back in the 90s, wasn't it?
But yeah, they said about when he signed with Nike, basically, they said, what we'll do is Nike predominantly into the 90s did trainers and footwear for tennis stars and running shoes. And they'd never done anything that they'd never done. They're not one that they'd never done football boots. They'd never done anything that they are now. And this deal with Michael Jordan for these Nike Air trainers paved the way to what they are now. And they're a huge national, global brand with trillions and billions and trillions of dollars worth. But basically, they said, okay, what we'll do is he was only young when he signed, and they said, what we'll do is we'll sign you up. We'll also we'll pay you 250 grand, right, to sign you up. And they were like, okay, well, why are you paying him so much? He's like, he's only young. There was also this is what they said on the video. This is not my opinion. There was also a lot of issues in the States and the fact that around racial discrimination. And Michael Jordan, you know, if you don't know me, you're listening to this, Michael Jordan is a black male, and there was a lot of issues around a black male being signed up to a massive global brand. So we'll pay you 250,000. Why are you paying him so much? What? You don't pay our other stars this. And they said, in the first year, we'll do a 3-year deal, and we'll give you a long deal. So then, and we'll pay you 250 grand, and then we'll pay you that, or it'll go up. There's a, depending on how many you sell. But in the 3 years, we want you to sell 1.5 million pairs of these Nike Air Jordans. They sold 150 million pairs in the first 6 months to a year. And that was I didn't list. I was so astonished. I missed the next bit. I've got to drop back and see what they did over the rest. I then went on eBay, I think it was, and looked for an original pair of 97, 98, or whenever it was, Nike Air Jordans. And you don't get, for a shit battered pair, you're not going to get any change out of about 500 quid, £500. They wanted 1.5 million pairs, and they sold 150 million pairs in the first 6 months to a year. And that is the power of what he could do. And yeah, I found it quite, I haven't finished it yet. I'm only halfway through, but I would definitely say, and I'm really trying to sell it a little bit here, but I'd definitely say, if you've got access to Netflix, I'd get in there and try and watch it, because it's definitely one to watch to find out how successful and how driven he was as a person. And I like that, because I'm quite a driven person. When I've got a beer, you know, from being friends with me and knowing me, when I've got a bee in my bonnet about something, or when I set my mind to it, I'll go at it 250%, because I want to get on and do it, basically.
On a similar vein, I watched the McDonald's documentary.
Yes, film. I watched that as well. Brilliant.
And that was fascinating.
What did you think of that, about how they sort of told that story?
I think it sums capitalism up in a way that, you know, and it epitomizes capitalism, doesn't it, in terms of the way money works, the way money talks. And if you're shrewd and you're, as you say, determined, driven, but also a bit clever, and you know a little bit more than the next person, you just eke that little advantage out, and that advantage can be massive. And just getting the right advice at the right time, and it's all about timing as well.
Absolutely.
And whilst I did feel a bit sorry for the original founders of the McDonald's brand, but at the same time I thought, well, back then they were given, I think it was £1 million each, or a million quid, which was a ridiculous amount of money for, you know, effectively what was a very good business that they'd set up and managed to that point. So whilst you do feel sorry for them, because obviously they all their hard work and endeavour, which then turned into be a multi-billion-pound company.
Yeah,
they were also quite resistant to it becoming that big scale thing. So, you know, in looking at it just purely black and white, they've done quite well out of it. And I think they went back to trying to set up and start again from scratch with their same sort of smaller, more customer focused ethics. So
I think it's a good film. I think Michael Keaton portrayed this, I've got the name up here, Ray Kroc, who was the founder, and the film is called The Founder. Just, I came across it by accident. I was watching something on telly and it just came up as a film, and I saw the Golden Arches and went, oh, what's this? Started watching it and I was hooked. And I think I started watching it about 11:45 or 10:40 at night. And the film's a good couple of hours long. And I just kept watching and watching and watching, because I thought, if I don't finish watching this, I'm not going to know. And it, all right, there's poetic license, shall they say, on the film, but it was fairly close to what happened. And it's all about...
What was interesting, though, Jim, is that he never actually seemed happy at any point in that film. And I think that's also a good lesson, isn't it? It's that money doesn't buy you happiness. That's a bit of an old cliche, but it really doesn't. And I think you at some point, you've got to be satisfied and happy with what you've got, haven't you? And I think I am at the moment. I'm really happy, lucky and blessed to have what I've got. And yes, it would be nice to have a little bit more money, but actually, you know what? I wouldn't swap any money for any reduction in happiness or life satisfaction. And I think that those two things are really important, aren't they, to keep hold of?
Absolutely.
And it's for me, again, as you say, poetic license. You take it with a pinch of salt as to how realistic it is. But if it did portray him in any way, shape or form accurately, is that all of that wealth, fame and success didn't necessarily equate to the same in happiness. So there you go.
And I agree. Yeah, money doesn't buy happiness. And he didn't ever appear happy, but he had a brilliant mind, which he just didn't get kickstarted until he met the two brothers. But I won't destroy it for people. But again, one to watch for you out there is The Founder, with Michael Keaton. Excellent film. Excellent. What have you got? We had a bit of a chat before. We pressed the lovely record button on this, and you were talking about how you want to do stuff within your current role, and how you want to try and bring exposure to what you're doing. And we talked a little bit about the podcast and what we're doing today. And you were talking about what's some stuff that you want to do within your role at Hammersmith. Do you want to talk about that? It'd be quite interesting for people to see, and if you just, you know, you get that up and running, which I'm sure you will.
Started doing that at Croydon over the last 8 years, and it was a tentative dip into the world of social media, and it was via Twitter, platform of Twitter. So had a personal Twitter account. I thought, you know what, I don't really kind of use it very much, and it's quite political, and it's, you know, it's very, there's lots of big opinions on there. But I could see the benefits of Twitter and the people that use it. So politicians, local politicians, councillors, local prominent members, local activists would use, clearly locally, would use Twitter. Mm-hmm. And also what I found quite quickly is you could connect very quickly with a lot of the councillors and a lot of the local activists and lots of the local vocal people by using that. And it would save you having to email people separately. And it was a very quick way of sharing the message, because obviously anybody could share that tweet you'd put out to them. So about about 5 years ago, we started using it for work purposes to publicise the work that we were doing. And you know, it only developed a sort of modest following, if you like. I say modest in the grand scheme of things. I think it's between 700 and 800 followers on there. I think up to about 1,000 at one point at the peak. But what it also, what I mean, 700 followers, 1,000 followers equates to lots of retweets, which then reaches a much bigger audience. So what I could see was the advantage and the benefit of one tweet. If it just hits the right note, it will go far and wide, and then suddenly your message is then not just viral, but it's there forevermore. And so what I was finding is echoes from one tweet from, you know, many months ago, you'd be getting direct messages, you'd be getting retweets, you'd be getting what was that? What am I getting this notification for? And it would be something that you'd done months and months ago.
Yeah.
It was a good bit of work back then, but you'd forgotten all about.
Yeah.
But people were seeing it and they were reacting with it. And I think several tweets got, you know, several thousand interactions. So very quickly, I could see that the benefit and the power of using Twitter to send that message out. And the other good thing is it gets you and your team and your division, your directorate known within your local authority and other local authorities as somebody prominent within the council. So you're punching above your weight, if you like, in terms of, you know, you're not really doing anything differently. You're just doing your job, but you're doing your job well. And actually, it's no difference kind of doing your job in another department, another team, doing exactly the same thing. But what you're doing is advertising it, and the power of advertising it and capturing people's minds and their imaginations is what you're doing, and relaying a message. So often, especially with police and public services, I think the public's biggest criticism is they don't see the council or the police there. They don't see them taking action. No. They don't see what it is they do. They're always questioning what it is you're doing. The good thing with that is you've got a published fact and a published record of what you have done and what you're currently doing. And I think, so what's fair to say is over the 5 years, the interactions grew and maintained and grew all the way through the interactions. And a big part of when I applied for the current role that I'm doing at Hammersmith, I think it's fair to say that I've been fairly well researched via social media before I was spoken to on my interview on the day. And I think when you get to the sort of level and the type of job that I'm doing now in terms of the level of public interaction I expect to see from the department, the level of council interaction I expect to see from the department, the amount of resident engagement they want from the department.
Yeah.
Seeing that kind of successful social media campaign is a vote winner, and it speaks for itself. So before you've even sat down to have your interview, people kind of know a lot about you and they want to import that brand into their team. And that was certainly the case for Hammersmith. You know, I had to go through quite an arduous interview process, and I had to do a virtual online presentation, PowerPoint, and explain it all. I had to time it exactly to 10 minutes. But in that 10 minutes, I had to cram everything in that I thought was relevant to the role. Bear in mind, you know how broad the role is, ASP, environmental crime. And all those sorts of support. So part of my presentation, I took a couple of slides that had the most interactions on social media, and I put them in there and just explained what I'd put them in there for, what they related to, the sort of engagement I got out of it, and that obviously went down, you know, understandably really well. And that's they said, well, that's kind of what we want. We want you to do that here. And I think I've had that conversation now a few times, and it's very clear that. You know, I'm not necessarily doing a job that's any better than counterparts in another division or in another borough. Yeah. But what I have done is I've been able to advise a massive number of people over sort of 5 years into what we're doing, get that engagement. And yeah, so that's kind of what I think I've learned over the last 5 years. That's what councils want to do. And the council historically not very good at doing that.
No.
So it's still a bit of a novelty. So if you can do it, then you're at a bit of an advantage.
And we're in the day and age now where people they'll pick up their phone and they'll sit eating their breakfast, or all right, not so much in the last 12 months or so, but it will start being again when people commute to work, or when they're waiting outside, going to drop their kids off at school, or they're waiting to go into work, or they're sitting having a coffee with their friends. They'll pick up their phones. And 99.9% of people have smartphones, and either they'll link into the local Wi-Fi or they'll have data on their phones, and they will look and start looking at stuff. So you're absolutely right, and that is a really good point. From having done the job and working within a local authority myself, they're always and rightly so, because we're residents and we pay our council tax and we pay our rates, etc. They want to know, the residents want to know what the councils are doing. And if you can then publicise that and show them what they're doing, they know what their rates are being spent on. And it looks good for, it's good for the organisation, it's good for the authority or the company whoever you're working for, and it advertises them out. And the people still use newspapers, but putting something on a Facebook page or a Twitter page or something that people can interact in is far more. And even Instagram is just photographs. So people do have Instagram, and local authority or businesses and organisations have it, so they can show pictures of what are going on, because most people would rather just swing through a load of pictures and see what's happening within their local area rather than have to read a load of blur about what's going on. They just want to quickly look through and go, oh yeah, I know that area, yeah, oh, they're clearing up and they're doing this, or like some of the stuff I use Instagram for, and for this podcast as well, it'll be, oh, we've got that person, or they're doing this, or the, you know, that's the whole idea.
And that's exactly, you hit the nail on the head as to why I think it's captured people's imaginations a bit, is because I would pin the tweet on, certainly on Twitter, pin it to the top thing, so anybody that landed on my page and could see the blurb about who I was and what I did for a living, The next thing they would see is a vehicle and a bit of a headline and a number next to it, as to obviously relate to the number of the vehicles that we've seized. And so people think, when they, again, it's like a brand recognition thing, when they would scroll through their timeline and they are the sort of people that are interested in that, you know, field of work, they would recognise if there's a van with a picture of, you know, being seized and a number next to it, they'd almost know that it was from the council. Mm-hmm. So they would look at it and they'd interact with it. And you're right, that's what you kind of need to do, you know, to kind of pick your market and grow your market. You know, and you need to sort of keep constantly send out those messages. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the audience will grow with social media. Mm-hmm. And obviously then once people have found that one picture, they obviously will track back and look at what else you've done. The other good thing on Twitter, certainly, is you can link your pictures. Absolutely. You can have like a thread. So that was good.
And it's done, I think it's done really good for you, and it's really done good for the role that you're in. So much so that we've been doing some work jointly between my company through SST and Marston Training, just get that in there, and with yourself, where we've been doing a lot of training around vehicle seizure, and we delivered some online training via Zoom earlier on this year. And I've been up and down the country advertising this course to different gatherings and different networks that you're involved in. And they say, oh, so how do you know this network? I go, well, blah, blah, blah. And we're a training company, and we've got connections with somebody who works in local authority, Chris McAvoy. Don't know if you know. Yeah, we know Chris McAvoy. Yeah, we know he is. Yeah, we know, and he's done this. So I think that, you know, that's definitely helped us for our business, but it's that working together, and it's the old phrase of, it's not what you know, it's who you know, and that has helped. And I think that's definitely fired you yourself, and I'm not saying this because you're here, that's definitely sort of given you exposure on what you do, for the right reasons, obviously, because it's your role and you're very passionate about your job, otherwise you wouldn't be doing it now. And that's just, you know, just the level of what you do and what people know what you do is gone big. And that's the whole idea. You're like an enforcement influencer, for environmental enforcement influencer.
Yeah, I like basis. That.
Yeah, that's good. Like that. That.
That's good.
When
I first started doing it, though, it was purely to say, well, how can we tell local people that that are craving this information, emailing us every week, and the councillors that are demanding that we take action, how can we sort of satisfy both those needs? That was it. That was the kind of spec. Let's give it a go. Comms were a little bit, I'm not sure. It's not going to be a corporate.
And that's account, always the way, because, you know, it's a corporate thing, yeah.
So it was done with a bit of a, you know, a risk, but being a bit lawfully audacious, I don't mind, you know, trying these things. I said, look, if it all falls down on me, on my head, be it. You can blame me for it, point the finger, but it was recognised, I think, to be quite a useful tool. And then eventually comms got on board and they started to engage and retweet the messages and, you know, make sure the councils were aware of it. And as I said, it's then become a bit of its own product, its own brand, its own right. And I think it's allowed it's, you know, it's definitely inspired others to get on board as well. So I've had messages from other council equivalent environmental enforcement officers contact me out of the blue and say, oh, Chris, don't mind me messaging me. Can I pick your brains about vehicle seizures? We don't do this yet. Would like to do it. I can see you do it. Can, you know, and I've done, I'm happy. I absolutely love speaking to people that are in that position where they're looking at what we do. They're in a position that we were in 5 years ago, but they want to be in the position where we are now. And they're showing that will and that desire to get to that position. Mm-hmm. But they're just like, they're missing a few bits of the puzzle. And they're like, how do we do it? And I've no problem at all sitting down with people and going through what we've done. And as you say, joining in your sort of training sessions to give a bit of context-based training. So people, you know, ask for a scenario, we can give an answer because we've been there and we've done it. Mm-hmm. It's not really a situation we don't understand how to deal with. And that really inspires people to be confident in going, you know what, I'm going to give this a go. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't have done it before. No. But they've seen what we do. They want to do it. They've listened to your guys in the training session. They've had a bit of an input from me in terms of context and, you know, getting rid of all their fears, basically. Once they understand the powers and how powerful the powers are, how effective they are and how they can go and employ them really almost risk-free, it just takes that risk-averse, cautious approach away and it makes people want to do it. And that's probably been the most satisfying thing for me in my career, in my entire career, is in the last few years, is actually being able to engage with people on a level that, to talk to them about something that we know so much about and know well enough about, we can talk almost from an expert sort of perspective and actually encourage and inspire them to do it themselves. And then when you see the fruits of that coming in and going, Chris just sees a vehicle, you're right, it's a piece of cake. And this is, you know, it's been so satisfying to do that. And again, as you say, it's been university agreed that that's a good way of doing things and other councils want to do it. And I've obviously come to Hammersmith and it's a fantastic council and they've got so many people that are so knowledgeable, all with a right the can-do attitude. But this seems to be one thing that slipped through the gaps a little bit in terms of for some reason they've not quite got it and they've not started doing it. But also they clearly really want to do it. And so that's where they've gone, well, you're the person we want to come in and install that and start, you know, set it up so we can start doing that as well when we can add that to our repertoire.
Was that via Twitter?
So I think
is that still active now, or
it's still active now. Obviously, I'm not currently doing anything at the moment because I'm in the process where I'm setting up the new teams at Hammersmith. Yeah. But part of the training will be delivering a full package on how to deal with this and setting up a whole process as to cradle to grave, how we're going to seize the vehicle, you know, designing paperwork, training the officers how to use it, setting up somewhere that we can seize the vehicles and store them, setting up the contracts, all that sort of stuff. So that's all in very early days at Hammersmith at the moment. But, you know, we'll get there. I'm confident we'll get there. And then once we've got that up and running, that's going to be a really big tick in the box for the councillors to say, right, well, we set that enforcement team up. That was part of the brief that we wanted to do. They're now doing that fantastic big tick in the box. And that's kind of what I'm here at Hammersmith to do. So that's it. That's job number one.
Well, there you go. And I think it's definitely been... as I said before, there are other people out there who have definitely picked up on it and they want to do it themselves. And it's definitely inspired people. And I think it's a job that needs to be done. And if you can inspire people, if you can be an environmental enforcement influencer to other people and to show them actually take the fears away and go, okay, well, it is fairly straightforward. You know, you can do it. So
it's a really small world as well, you know, the environmental side. And what I've also found is one of those people that contacted me out of the blue way back when and said, you know, can you help me out with this process? And we did, and they got up and running and set up. That person then applied for a job at Hammersmith after I started. And we're now looking to employ, or, you know, we're now about to employ that person in a senior role. So again, it shows you what a small world it is. And that networking, that was the kind of the catalyst for that person getting that job. It was that conversation we had way back when, the working together on that project, then seeing the opportunity come up to kind of work together again on it, and they've come in and applied for the job and have got it. So I'm really looking forward to working with people like that.
Oh, brilliant. That's really good. And I think that, you know, I wish you the best of luck and in all you're doing, and you're very passionate about what you do, and that's a big tick from me, and you always have been, mate, and that's why we get on so well with everything that we do. So just to finish off before, because we have been talking for quite a while now, and that's what I wanted to do with this podcast, is to just open it up, just have a chat about stuff. What's your favourite drink? It can be alcoholic or non-alcoholic. I'm going to stick with the
Malbec.
Malbec.
Bottle of Malbec. 100%.
Nice. Yeah, I'll second that. That's definitely. Or a nice Chateau Neuf de Pape if you can get hold of one.
Or that for special occasions. Yeah. Absolutely.
Or if in doubt, Liz's gin.
Yeah, it's a poor second.
But don't tell her. Mate.
No, it's not too bad. Tanqueray gin or Waterhoot.
Waterhoot gin, yes.
is the current family favourite.
Yeah, and people have, you know, there's people who are up in Norfolk who are listening. Yes, I have sent Waterhoot, and Waterhoot has broken, or already has anyway, but it's broken down and travelled its way down to London, and is a firm favourite of Chris's and his household. Chris, you've been an absolute legend, mate. Thank you ever so much for coming on to episode 2 of Spill the Tea with Jimmy C podcast.
Thanks for having me, mate.
I've really enjoyed it. And hopefully, you know, I'll say this now and we'll probably stop pressing record or in the future go, oh, I'm not doing that again. No, you won't. Come back. You know, it'd be great at some point in the future, come back again and speak to us and, you know, just see how you're doing and how things have moved on. I really appreciate it, mate. Thank you very much. It's been great. And thank you to all for listening in. It's Spill the Tea with Jimmy C podcast with me, Jim, and Mr. Chris McAvoy. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for being here and tune in again soon. Take care.